Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Action Filmmaking Podcast, the podcast dedicated to breaking down action films of all types. My name is Darren Tun, and with me is my lovely co-host, Skylar Tun. Today, we have a very special guest, Mr. Hello. Mike Moe. Mike is an actor and stuntman from Street Fighter Resurrection, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and he runs his own martial arts school in Wanakee, Wisconsin. Mike, how are you?
I'm great, and great pronunciation of my small town of Wanakee, Wisconsin.
We were asking about that before. We had to make sure we knew.
Yeah, usually I just say Madison because people have heard of that town, and that's close enough.
Gotcha. All
right. So, Mike, before we got started with your acting career, we wanted to talk about your martial arts background. So we know that you got started in Taekwondo with Enter the Dragon, but we were wondering how you built up such a varied repertoire in martial arts, just like with Eskrima and Wing Chun and...
You know, that just kind of happened with my time in LA. You know, as you know, like through the stunt community and action performers, people that just love action cinema, you just kind of find your way into these groups of friends. And for me, I was really lucky to be able to hang out with friends that have trained in so many different styles. So whether it was like the old days of hanging out at White Lotus or even recently Jam whenever I visit or whenever I go and train, I'm always trying to pick up some things from my friends because I'm trying to teach them. They try to teach me, and that's kind of how it goes. And as you guys know, as fans of action cinema, there's always a blend of at least two or three different styles in every fight that we see on screen.
Right. But that's cool. So it's like a mutual kind of, you teach me.
Yeah. And I mean, I've only been formally trained for a long period of time in Taekwondo, but I mean, I've, depending on the role, you know, for whatever role sometimes I'll have like 3 months of prep to really get into that style. And sometimes I'll have like 2 days of prep, you know what I'm saying? And it all depends on the production. It all depends. So for me as a performer, it's just constantly trying to vary it. You know, my base will always be kicks and it'll always be Taekwondo, but you know, every workout I try to bring something else in. So I'm, you know, adaptable and also just keeping my student brain fresh as opposed to just falling into the rut of, you know, I'm a specialist in one thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, we're all students. Absolutely. Of martial arts. You know, you don't stop learning.
Right. I'm kind of wondering how much guidance were you given in terms of how to teach martial arts to others? And like, how has your teaching style kind of changed over the years?
Yeah, you know, I think from an early age, I started when I was 12 and I spent like six days a week at my martial arts school. And I think I just, through osmosis, you pick up different ways from your instructor, whoever you take a seminar from, different ways that you want to integrate into your own style of teaching. But I think more importantly, also, sometimes you got to go through classes and experience instructors that maybe you have a hard time with so you can understand like what not to do or what doesn't work with your own personal style. And for me, now that I'm, you know, when I was 20, 21, you know, with my first teaching job, I'm sure I was a lot different as a teacher as I am now. I think I focused more on the athletic pursuits of martial arts when I was younger. And now that I'm getting into my 30s, it's really more about the lifestyle. And my school is about, you know, I want to be able to affect as many lives as possible through my martial arts school. And I want to give them a place where they can all have a fight. Awesome. And some of them want to fight for a title in Taekwondo or whatever it is. Some of them want to fight against, you know, stand up against bullies. And some people just want to find a discipline that they can use to set goals, achieve them, fail, train, repeat, all that stuff. So our school is really a family martial arts school, and whatever your goal is, my goal is to make sure that everybody knows that their pursuit, whether it's fighting or not, is to get better personally.
Right. Well, segueing from that, especially with your passion for Taekwondo and the multiple avenues that someone may take into entering martial arts, personally, what's your favorite aspect of Taekwondo? And that could be, you know, the discipline, whatever philosophies you may subscribe to, or segueing into that with your passion in Taekwondo, what do you think your favorite aspect of the martial art is?
Well, for me, through watching movies and playing Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat and watching all the cartoons and stuff, for me, it was all about the aesthetic, just flying through the air, doing spin kicks. And I think that's what kind of helped me gravitate or stick to Taekwondo because of all the kicking. And then as I got more exposed to the martial arts in general, it's just, for me, it was never like, oh, I want to do martial arts because it can do this for me. For me, it was just fun. And it was just the one thing that my parents didn't have to like goad me into training. It was just, that's what I wanted to do. And it became, you know, I used to play video games all the time. Then I started martial arts, and then I would split my time like, all right, well, I'm gonna play this video game so I can learn what kind of moves I can emulate. And then I'd go to class and I'd train it. And it would just be like this constant thing, like, I'm gonna pick up some of Huarong's moves from Tekken, or I'm gonna try this bicycle kick from Liu Kang. And then you realize some of these moves are kind of physically impossible. And then you try it anyway. And then now you see guys like, you know, Marshall Club, Brian and Andy, they're like doing stuff that I thought was physically impossible. So it's, for me, it was just a passion. And now I see it as something that's given me everything that's really good and positive in my life. So I'm just glad that I had something at a young age to give me a path and a purpose.
Right. No, that's really cool. But now from a teacher's perspective, which part would you say that you enjoy the most? And I mean, like, you know, teaching how to do forms or board breaking or sparring or, you know, trick kicks. Which one would you say you enjoy the most?
Oh, that's a good question. I used to say forms. I used to just be a forms guy when I competed, and I did all of the disciplines, but I excelled in forms. It's something about just, you know, repeating something until it becomes a habit. And
so you get that nice flow.
Yeah, exactly. And now, you know, I'm a lot more well-rounded. I'm a lot more rounded when it comes to teaching. So now I see the benefit of every single thing that we do, whether it's forms for mental focus and technique, sparring for practical application and athletic application, board breaking, even though boards don't hit back, just for power. And kids love breaking boards, even adults. Like, everybody loves to break boards. So
oh, cool,
yeah, it's like a showcase.
Exactly. Everything that we do serves a purpose. And for our school, that purpose is just building up your confidence, building up your self-worth. And we've had a lot of students that take that and apply that into martial arts tournaments. And we have a lot of, you know, students that just apply it into being just a happier, healthier person. And that's the end game.
Yeah, I know now with like COVID-19 and everything going on, obviously you'd have to switch over to a more virtual environment. But I would ask you, what are like some of like the highlights and lowlights of teaching martial arts online in a virtual environment? And how do you feel about, I guess, the mats opening back up on June 1st?
Yeah, it's been a wild couple months, and, you know, it's been very challenging. But I think I've learned so much about teaching and how to deliver an exciting and an informational class, you know, through a medium that we never thought we'd be doing. Like, if you told me 2 years ago, like, our full schedule would be Zoom classes, I would have called you crazy.
Yeah.
But the fact that we've been able to adapt, and our students have been really open to it, and they've excelled through it. But with all that being said, I'm excited that we can slowly and safely start bringing people back in. And the nice thing about this is, even when we get to the point where we're safe enough to come back to our normal training mode, now we all have this ability to teach and learn through a virtual format. So I think it opens up a lot of exciting opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, I used to travel and do seminars. Now people can literally learn from anybody through the comfort of your own basement or garage, or some people training outside.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a really cool thing that's going to be opening up.
It's definitely a different experience, you know, being in the dojo versus being, you know, in your own house and watching a Zoom class. But I guess it really does test your abilities as a teacher to, you know, deliver those same lessons from your own home as opposed to right in front of the students.
Yeah, and we've been we've all been able to combat the COVID-19 pounds, because teaching on Zoom is like the best workout when it comes to teaching, because you can't take a break. You're always on camera and you've always got to demonstrate.
Yep.
Like, when we're in the studio, a lot of times I'll rely on my assistant instructors to
that
demonstrate, because if you're teaching five to six classes a night, you physically cannot give everything. But with Zoom, you're literally, you know,
you
even
to,
with an instructor, you have to keep him engaged. You have to be completely, you know, you have to work on you know, pacing up your class to keep it exciting and then slowing it down so they don't burn out. There's a real art form to teaching Zoom classes.
It's good that you've been able to find, you know, pros to Zoom classes. And before we get into your acting yeah. career, we just wanted to ask one last question about, you already have, we would call a massive mastery in martial arts, you know, with Kyokushin karate, as we've seen in Street Fighter, and your Jeet Kune Do in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Are there any other martial arts in particular you would like to add to your arsenal in the future?
Oh, I think you're being very generous as to the labeling you just gave me. I appreciate it, but I mean, I'm honestly the only. I don't even feel like I'm a master of Taekwondo yet. You know, I'm almost humble to a fault, but I feel like there are so many things that I can improve on, even the style that I call home. But yeah, I mean, I cannot tell you how much fun I had, you know, in capturing Ryu. That Japanese hard style was just so fun. And it was a very, very, I don't want to say smooth, but it was a very, I don't want to say easy either, but it was a very natural progression to move to the Kyokushin style, that Ryu's style of Ansatsuken mirrors. Mm-hmm. As far as Bruce was actually the toughest because I've been growing up my whole life emulating Bruce Lee. And I don't think there's a martial artist that, you know, is in our generation that didn't grow up emulating his moves, right? So when it came to actually trying to do it authentically, it's completely different, because you can wave your hands and kick and make the noises and the movements and the footwork, and you can copy that pretty well. But when it comes to actually applying it hand to hand, it's like a different language. So for me, that was the most challenging. But you know, I had a lot of fun training in those intensive training weeks with Rob Alonzo, who's like a Swiss Army knife in martial arts, and I just had so much fun learning and being a student on that set.
That's incredible, man. I saw several interviews with you before, and you say that you got your start into basically you got your start into martial arts with Rumble in the Bronx, Jackie Chan film. Do you have a favorite stunt from that movie?
That whole sequence, the thing that really stands out, you know, the pinball machines, him fighting in that underground layer, or that it reminded me of the Ninja Turtles original movie, when all the kids are, you know, doing the shredder and they're all in that warehouse, right? But there's Jackie Chan in one of those types of things, just wrecking everybody and using his environment, using props. It's just, that was mind blowing to me. And just him just climbing up that chain link fence like Spider-Man. Just like, he kind of opened up even more so than Bruce. Like, he opened up like, wow, he's like a circus performer, but he's an actor and he's a martial artist and he's so funny. So there are so many moments from that movie. Like, you watch
mixing
it again.
Action with comedy.
Absolutely. He was such a performer. You know, he's a mix of Bruce Lee, Charlie Chaplin, Mel Gibson. You know, he's got so many different things going on.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Jackie Chan is a performer and a martial artist is amazing to watch. But I know, like, several years after that, obviously you went to college, and you state that you majored in business in college, and that you were actually going to be a finance guy at a bank, but something changed along the way and you actually decided to go into acting. I'm kind of wondering from as a student perspective, what gave you the confidence to pursue that route, and what was it like with your parents, like, telling them about this this choice?
Very typical Asian parent route versus what you actually want to do route. I think I convinced myself when I was a kid, and I think because of, you know, what society and what my parents kind of expected or hoped for me, I think I came up with a story in my head that, yeah, I could make it in business school and I can go to a financial firm and make a lot of money and be fun, be happy and live a successful life. And then, you know, kind of like in martial arts, you can only imagine how effective something will be until you actually put it into practice. So when I put it into practice, I went to an internship and I literally wanted to just crawl in a hole and die the first day within 2 hours, because you're sitting at this desk
in
a cubicle, and immediately I knew. I was like, all right, well, there goes my first couple years of college thinking that this was my path. And I'm glad that I fell into this internship because now I know exactly what I don't want to do. And when you figure out what you don't want to do, sometimes that's just as powerful as figuring out what you do want to do, because I think sometimes you have to try enough things in life to realize what doesn't make you happy to keep searching for something that really, really sets your soul on fire. So yeah, for me, the internship was the one that was like, okay, I can't do this. And
Well, you never know until you try. Yeah,
exactly. That gave me the courage to be like, you know what? I don't care if my parents disown me. Nothing's worse than sitting in that cubicle for me, at least. I mean, some people are built for different things, and for me, I just wasn't built for that.
Well, you made the right choice. Yeah. You're a great actor. We noticed that in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you really captured Bruce Lee's likeness very well, especially with his mannerisms, his body language, even his accent. Was there any particular source material that stood out to you when you tried to study how to play Bruce Lee?
Well, with your compliment, you just earned yourself 4 more hours of podcasting. No, just kidding.
Oh, no.
I appreciate the kind words. I appreciate the compliment. For me, I don't know if you guys remember that. There's always clips of it online, but he did this long form interview on Black and White Film, the Pierre Bertrand Show. And that's like a 30-minute interview where I think that's the one that I downloaded to my phone and I had always in my ear, my AirPods, just preparing for the role for months on end, from the audition process all the way up to like the day before I filmed. So that is, you know, if you're surrounded by something enough, it starts to become you a little bit. And I remember exactly. And I even remember having some of my students, because up to that point I was, you know, still teaching, you know, regularly.
Right.
And some of my students were starting to question, like, because I didn't tell them what was going on. And they were like, wow, your hair is getting really long and your cadence when you're teaching is sounding different. And I wasn't doing it on purpose. It just, I was just starting to become Bruce in certain ways.
Right.
So for me, it was just, exactly. It was a little bit of method acting and just immersing myself. And for me, that sometimes it can be arduous to really get into a character, especially if you don't really connect with them. You know, I had no problem jumping into Bruce just because I'm such a fan. So for me, it wasn't work. It was just an exciting way to prep for something that I've been dreaming of and kind of hoping for, I don't know, ever since I was 12.
I saw there was some actually like behind the scenes footage of you and Brad Pitt training. What was it actually like to fight Brad Pitt in this movie?
Yeah, I mean, I became kind of like, I was always a fan of Brad, and I know how many movies. I think he's kind of like underrated, not anymore, but I think he's kind of underappreciated for what types of films and the choices he made and what kind of characters he played. I think so many people just dismiss him as like just like this hunky A-list type of celebrity. But when you get to, when you really get to look at his work, and especially when you get to work with him, you like, I just developed this affinity for how he's been able to keep it all together with so much time in the spotlight and being at the top of his game. You know, he's, and the only way you can do that, I think, in Hollywood for that long is to actually be like a good person. You know, you can't hide who you are for that long. I mean, this guy is just, you know, he walks the walk, he talks the talk. He doesn't even talk the talk. He's genuine. He's down to earth. He never felt anybody, he never made anybody feel like they were lesser. And I remember like the second or third day on set with him, we were just sitting and we must've been tired from, you know, banging wrists with the fight choreography. And I told him, I was like, hey man, I really appreciate you welcoming me to the set, you know, with open arms and making me That's feel awesome. Like one of you guys, because, you know, there's Kurt Russell, there's Quentin Tarantino, there's Brad Pitt. And then who's this guy, you know? So yeah, for me, that was huge. That kind of opened up my performance because I felt relaxed. I felt welcome. I felt, absolutely, absolutely.
For Brad Pitt and I guess the motivation it gave you, how did you find the confidence to be able to portray Bruce Lee?
I think I was a little naive. Like, I was just excited that finally, after so many years of near misses and just wanting to be able to play this type of role, not even just Bruce, but to be able to showcase what my skills as a performer are. And I knew I only had one scene that was long enough to really make an effect on the film. And I decided right away when I started auditioning, I was like, well, if I only have this small cameo, I'm going to make sure it's memorable, and I'm going to make sure it captures Bruce's magnetism and his charisma. And that was my goal. You know, I've seen so many other Bruce Lee interpretations, and I'm a huge fan of Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, as inaccurate as it might be. I feel like that was one of like the first superhero origin movies, you know what I'm saying? So that,
right.
Yeah, for me, it was easy to prepare. What was tough was just dealing with the expectations after I had filmed. I didn't realize how heavy, you know, it was. You don't realize that when you play Bruce Lee, you're not playing a guy, you're playing a god, you're playing a legend in many people's eyes. So it's very hard. And as you guys know, I'm sure you guys heard all of the noise, but it's like, you can't please everybody. So yeah, I'm glad that I didn't really put that pressure on myself before, and I was naive, and I just went in. I was like, I'm going to make Bruce badass. I want to make him fun. I want to make him funny. I want to make him, you know, smart, and just capture that energy that you guys talked about, that thin line between cockiness and confidence that he wrote so well.
Let's stay on Bruce Lee, and let's talk about Jeet Kune Do.
Right.
We know that you study a little bit of Jeet Kune Do, and though it's the child of multiple martial arts, mainly Wing Chun, it's usually known as a philosophy with guiding ideas. So we wanted to ask, how does one really learn Jeet Kune Do? Is it more body and techniques, or is it more thought and mind?
I think it's, you know, I was talking to somebody about this not too long ago. You know, Jeet Kune Do was tailor-made by Bruce for Bruce. You know, the movements and the style was tailor-made so he could take different things from different arts and his own training and apply it against somebody that was bigger, stronger, faster than him. That's not going to work for everybody. So for me, I think Jeet Kune Do is how can you, as a person, as a martial artist of your own, how can you take your own personal experience in martial art, whatever art that may be, and apply that with taking in other people's thoughts and morphing them to your body style or your attributes, kind of like a video game. So for me, I think of Jeet Kune Do as like a personal conquest to improve yourself by being open to other things. And obviously he's got an art form that has the technical things in that. And I don't really know that. I'm still a white belt when it comes to the technical aspect. But the thing that really drove my training was this thought that in Jeet Kune Do, Bruce was always pushing forward. And if there was an obstacle, your goal is to remove the obstacle so you can keep pushing forward, whether that's in footwork or, you know, the Jisao, you know, just whatever it is. And that mental pursuit is, and that kind of helped my acting as well. That's what Bruce did in his life. If there was an obstacle, whether it's racism or just bias against certain things in his movie career, he would do whatever he needed to do to remove it or bust through it and then keep moving forward towards his goals. And, you know, this guy was a man on a mission. And as we can all attest to right now, he's left his legacy.
Of course. That's a really amazing perspective. I never thought of Jeet Kune Do as a martial art that's tailor-made for Bruce Lee. You know, like, what a guy. But
right.
Let's get down to the more technical aspect, because he mentioned a concept that he called combat realism, which is in the stage of what you could call street combat, I guess. It's better to follow a certain set of guidelines to realistically beat an opponent. And one of these was, well, quoted from him, that flashier, flowery moves shouldn't be used in this realm of street combat. So do you think that these kinds of moves, whether it be, you know, a 360 roundhouse kick or some kind of jumping, spinning backswing, do you think they have a place? I mean, their own special place in martial arts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I even tell my students this. We don't train spin kicks and head level round kicks and front kicks for practical application. If I had my choice, I'm going to do what Bruce did. I'm going to jab my fingers in their eyes. I'm going to kick them in the shins, and I'm going to take the path of quickest and least resistance to defend yourself. But, you know, I admittedly didn't grow up in like a rough neighborhood where I had to defend myself every day. For me, martial arts was more of like a lifestyle where I could improve my body, my mind, and my spirit. So, you know, I've learned backflips, I've learned all these acrobatic maneuvers, and I don't say like, hey, I'm going to use this cheat 720 kick to break your nose. It's more about the pursuit. It's more about what type of attributes did I need to build up to gain this move, kind of like a video game. So it's like, all right, well, I got to work on my leg strength. I got to work on my fast twitch muscles. I've got to work on gauging my distance if I'm going to hit the paddle in the right angle. I have to work on my perseverance because that move is not something you can learn overnight. So a lot of these things, they mirror a lot of the attributes that you would need in a real fight. Speed, distance, perception, perseverance, just heart, and all those things can apply kind of like a video game. You just level these things up. Of course, you could say, yeah, I'm going to backflip on this guy's head after I knock him down with a tornado kick. I mean, that's fun to think about. And the reason why we do those things is because we see it in movies and it's fun and it's exciting and it's cool. And, you know, when I was a kid, it's like, hey, I could do this move and impress this girl. But now it's like, how can I apply this to make it look really flashy, but at the same time, as we're moving towards more of a fight scene era where it's more practical as opposed to just that Hong Kong style, which has its space in history forever. But how can we mix it to make it as practical as can be without breaking that fourth wall of like, that's impossible. It's almost like when you're watching a movie, you can suspend reality for just enough to say, you know, wow. And then even if you watch the UFC, like look at Anthony Pettis, he's, you know, back in when the days he's throwing that Showtime kick, that's straight out of a video game. You can't tell me that wasn't practical in that moment. It worked. And different fighters like Israel Adesanya, he looks like he's playing video games. Conor McGregor, he looks like an Irish Bruce Lee at times. So it all depends on the stylist. You know, Bruce Lee said it's not about the style, it's about the fighter. I don't know if Bruce Lee said that, but maybe Chuck Norris. Who knows? Somebody said it.
Somebody said it, and they would be right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, before we move on, we know that your heart lies in Taekwondo. So, just to make a quick note of it, in what ways do you think that Taekwondo is effective for self-defense or street combat? And it can be, you know, a technique, or it could just be the principles of, you know, power or versatility or speed or you know, anything like that.
Right. I you know, my base is Taekwondo and that's where my home is, but I'll be the first to tell you it's not the most effective for street combat. You know, if I got into martial arts to fight people, I probably wouldn't have chosen Taekwondo. Why did I get into Taekwondo? Number one, because that was the closest school to my house as a kid growing up. Another thing is because my dad used to tell me stories about learning Taekwondo in the Korean army. So for me, it was more about convenience and just, you know, luck. There wasn't a Jeet Kune Do school. There wasn't a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu school. There wasn't a Muay Thai kickboxing school. And not to say I would have chosen one over the other, but for me as a kid, I wasn't thinking so far ahead as how am I going to kick this bully's ass? It's more like, how am I going to learn this Tatsumaki Senpukaku, you know? And how am I going to learn how to do these moves that I'm seeing in the movies like Jackie and Bruce? So for me, it was Taekwondo just seemed to be the natural and the easiest way for me to actually learn from somebody other than a movie star or a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cartoon.
That's great, man. Well, moving on to like our last segment here, we actually wanted to get into Asians in cinema. I don't want to get too political about this, but with COVID-19 and all the racism that's been happening, what are some of the things that you think that Asians can do in opposition to like the xenophobia that's been happening?
Yeah, it's really been, I don't know if it's because we're all cooped up inside and we're all spending a lot more time on the news or people are sharing it more. But yeah, I've definitely noticed not only Asians, but just racist and, you know, terrible things going on in the world. And I think, you know, part of it is because this COVID-19 has all hit us kind of out of nowhere. And our brain and our heart is a little bit more susceptible to bringing in this negative stuff, this negative energy because of the situation we're in. But for me, it's like I haven't really sat and thought about how it affects people and how it's affected my life. I've done a lot of introspection in the last couple of months. And for me, it's now I'm reminded of, you know, when I see this poor black guy get killed by a police officer with excessive force, like I'm starting to put myself in situations like, well, wow, if I'm an Asian and I don't feel scared to go on a run or go get pulled over by a cop, like I can't imagine what it would be. And whereas before I really didn't think of it in that term. But now that we're seeing all this stuff, you know, the only thing that the least that we can do is point it out. And there are a lot of people who are in our situation that they're not bad people. They just don't know. They don't have the experience. They've had a life that they didn't have to worry about being judged or having racist attacks. And, you know, I'm sure you guys, along with me, any Asian kid growing up in America, we've all experienced some sort of racism, whether it was ignorance or just hate. But now I think as we get older and especially people that are in media, we have a platform where we can say like, look, this is not cool. And in case you didn't know, this is not cool. This is not cool. And, you know, the more it can be pointed out. And look, I'm not on social media to be like, you know, teaching people about what they should think. But at the same time, like, I think it's important that if we feel like we can help other people understand our perspective and what it's like to be an other in America, I think that only just, it doesn't hurt at all. So, you know, I've been trying to keep things positive, but at the same time, to make sure that history doesn't repeat itself, we just have to do our part and just, you know, pointing it out like, hey, this isn't cool. Like this exactly. Acknowledge it and say, hey, you know, if you see something going on like this, don't be afraid to speak up because it's wrong. Or if you see something like this, you know, we don't like it. Don't do it. If you like Asian people or if you have a loved Asian one, stick up for others and just call it out because maybe they didn't know. I grew up in Minnesota. There were so many instances that I went through that I know for sure looking back, it wasn't because they were racist. It's because they were ignorant and they've never been outside Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying?
I don't think that anyone is really evil.
Yeah.
They just either, you know, they're ignorant or they have, well, mostly it's ignorance and understanding is probably the best way to go when combating xenophobia. But in the entertainment industry, would you say that the current landscape for being an Asian American actor is improving, or is there, God forbid, there's some kind of decline?
Yeah, I think it's definitely better. I just, you know, I can only tell you guys what my experience is because I'm the only one that's lived my own experience. But I just know that when I first started out, it was, and I think partly because I was starting out, I only had opportunities to do like martial arts roles. And that was kind of by design because I knew coming in not trained as an actor, like I knew what I was good at. I was good at martial arts. You know, I had a knack for performance, but I wasn't an actor at that point. So I used it. And, you know, I told my agents at an early time, like, I don't want to do the Asian accent thing. And for me, I think that was important because I didn't get those opportunities. So I might not have had as many auditions, sure, but the ones that I did get were the ones that I chose that I wanted to do. Was I willing to be the martial arts guy in a commercial? Absolutely. I mean, I paid many months of rent by doing that for many years, but that wasn't my end game. I don't want to be just the Asian martial arts guy, you know? So I used that time while I was in LA to train. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I became the guy that said one thing in a show. And then I became this, and I just kept training. Kind of like I look at my journey as an actor as I moved to LA and I was a white belt. And now I feel like I'm like a blue belt, you know, after 12 years. So just every little thing, every failure or every disappointment or every victory, kind of you earn your stripes on your belt, and then something comes along and you just stick with it long enough. And if you keep on the path, absolutely. There's no such thing as a overnight sensation. And if there is, they're usually gone not too long after. So for me, it's been better because now when I get auditions, you know, a lot of times they're not Asian characters. They're just open ethnicity. And anytime that I can, for me, it's a big victory when I can book a role that has nothing to do with martial arts, because that validates like all the training I've done to kind of get out of just being in the box of, oh, well, Mike Mo, sure, he can kick and punch and act, but only when he's kicking and punching can he act. I want to show people that I'm just a performer and I'm versatile and I just happen to love martial arts, and you know, the big goal when I first started was, yeah, I want to be in action movies. That doesn't mean that's the only thing I want to do, but that's what I want to do.
And now you're in Boogie with Eddie Huang. I was kind of wondering, what was it like working with Eddie on this project?
Yeah, I mean, I had a blast living in New York. I think I was there for like 5-6 weeks. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, I the first week and a half or 2 weeks, I didn't use the subway.
Oh, no way.
I was doing Ubers and stuff. It was terrible.
People on our show have been talking about how subways are like the enemy for them.
No, once I learned it.
Especially New York.
It took my wife to come out and visit me. She's like, you haven't been using the subway. I was like, yeah, it's a little intimidating with all like the maps and all this stuff. I don't want to get lost. So once she came out and I like, we learned it together and, you know, it's very, it reminds me of Korea, just like the public transportation. It's nice.
Oh, right,
it's so efficient.
Right.
So it opened up the city to me. I was like, because a lot of times I was like, well, I'm not going to go to that side of the city because it's going to be an $80 Uber ride. No, I had a great time. And for me, that getting that film was great because that was my first film set after Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And I made a conscious thought in my mind. I wanted to do something that wasn't martial arts. After I played Bruce Lee, because you play Bruce Lee and then you jump onto a couple action martial arts, then you might never get out of that. So for me to get Boogie. Yeah, exactly. So for me to get Boogie where I get to play just a guy who happens to be Asian American and he's kind of a dick and he's like a basketball manager. It's completely different than playing Bruce Lee.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I had a lot of fun. I couldn't believe that Eddie was a first time director. You know,
That's crazy too, especially with Fresh Off the Boat and everything.
Yeah, he's got such a really fresh perspective on not only the Asian American experience, but just in culture. He's an important person for American culture, and his voice is all over this movie, and it's a lot of fun, and I think it's going to have a wide audience, not just Asian Americans, but I think a lot of people will be able to relate with Boogie in this story.
Well, Mike, thank you. You've been such a great guest. Now, we have just one last question for you. If you could ever have the privilege of creating your own martial art, what would be the guidelines or the technical focus of the said martial art?
Wow. You're making me think. Jeez. Well, you know, I guess I'll just keep it as real to life as possible. I mean, my school, like I'd been talking about, it's a school that's welcoming to all types of people. I want somebody who's never done any athletic experience to be able to feel comfortable to learn, but I also want to be able to create, and we have created, you know, Taekwondo sport champions as well. So for me, it's about just making it accessible for people that really want to put in the work to succeed. That's important. And success looks different to every single person because not everybody's going to have the physical aptitude to become like a badass martial artist, but they may have the mental capacity to really get the essence of how to apply it, you know, when they're in school or when they're in their career. So our school, we use Taekwondo forms, but we also every cycle or every session that we do, we pull in at least a couple things from other systems. So sometimes we'll have like a sport kickboxing combo. Sometimes we'll do a BJJ ground sequence. And for me, I think the more we can learn to Jeet Kune Do-ify all martial arts and just be welcoming into, you know, maybe in 20 years, it's just martial arts. It's not like broken off, you know? Exactly. So I think the more we can move towards that and just, because I think the divide in this country and the divide in martial arts is because there's teams, you know, if we can all just be on the same team, we'll be open to ideas and just sharing what works, whether it's on, you know, the teaching side or being a student or, you know, and that's what the UFC has kind of shown from a combat perspective. But I'd like to see martial arts just become more mainstream. Eventually, you know, how amazing would it be if martial arts was part of like a public school curriculum with teachers that knew what they're doing? I think that would really change the world in a positive way.
That'd be fun.
That'd be great, man. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Mike. We really appreciate your time here. We would love to have you back as a guest on another episode, maybe sometime in the future, if you're up for it. Yeah. Where can people find you on social media and Mo's Martial Arts?
On Instagram, I'm Mike Mo, all one word, same thing on Twitter. And Mo's Martial Arts is on Instagram. So you can see what we're doing in our community through our martial arts training. And yeah, I appreciate you, Darren and Skylar, having me on. Great conversation. And yeah, would love to be back on someday.
Awesome.
100%.
Thank you.